Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So I couldn't resist one more question about security. I hope we can go back to talking about AI and tech because security is kind of an exhausting thing to think about too much. But I had the experience a couple of weeks ago. I was going out buying sweets at a sweet store, as your average 36-year-old man does on a Friday, and stocking up. And I noticed that there was an awful lot of police in the sweet store, which, needless to say, is not the typical thing you expect to find in a candy store. So my initial thought was this was in Jerusalem, by the Shuk Mahane Yehuda, for those familiar. And I thought sometimes you'll see on Friday like these groups, trainee police or border police will, because the Shuk in Jerusalem is like a national, kind of a national landmark in Israel. So you'll see literally Israeli tour groups, which always kind of entertains me that in a place as small as Israel, there is such thing as domestic tourism, and there is these tour guides with their, you know, walkie-talkie things. So you see that a bit, soldiers, etc. So that's what I assumed was going on. And I was like, all right, well, fine. I'm just here to get my sweets and go on my way. But it wasn't that. So there was. I was going in for my, you know, I'm a creature of habit, as you know. So I was going in for my kind of sugary peaches on the right. And then I was like, oh, wait, that's Ben-Gvir. Ben-Gvir is like a lightning rod politician in Israel, very populist. And he was buying sweets. And that was what all the security was about. So it was kind of weird because he was like trying to speak to people or having conversations. But the police were also looking kind of really just, I don't know, aggressive, don't get too close. But anyway, so there was loads of these guys and they were keeping people back. I'm not sure how. I guess I was at the edge of the perimeter where my sweets were. But it got me thinking firstly about what this was, because if you're a minister in Israel, and Ben-Gvir is probably the most, you know, kind of polarizing and flamboyant, and I'm sure there's an endless amount of threats personally against him. On the one hand, I like to think that he just wants to buy sweets. On the other hand, I wonder when someone at the ministerial level has a basic human need, like they want to buy ice cream or pizza or burgers, how is that handled? Like, you can't just go down to the local, you know, grocery store and pick up some frozen chicken to throw in the air fryer. So that has to be coordinated. And I guess maybe that's topic number one. I presume, this is a course I asked ChatGPT, what did I just see? Like, was this a pre-planned public meet and greet thing that his aide said it would be a good look to be just going out buying sweets and you can talk to some people? Or was it truly something like he just says to his, you know, secretary, you know what, I want to go buy sweets, get a car ready and get police ready? Because it wasn't just in the candy store. When I went out, the whole street was like kind of shut down. I was like, oh my gosh, what did I just walk into? So it's a major deal. So that's question number one. How do, and heads of state, ministers, what have you, when they want to do basic human needs, if they need to do that on a daily basis, do they just send out someone? So if it's them in person and this whole security detail they have to bring, does that already mean it's a pre-planned thing? Question number two, Herman and Corin. The police surrounding him are kind of, they have in Israel, they wear these police baseball caps, but often they're not necessarily working directly with the police. They're like personal protection officers. I actually worked years ago with someone whose husband was a personal protection officer, literally the bodyguards you see in security details for VIPs and politicians. And an intriguing job. And she says, her name is Ellie, that when she was out with her husband, he would see things that she just didn't see. Whether it was someone pulling down the window of their car, and just in a normal everyday context. And I guess that's what I always wonder about those guys, whether we're talking about bodyguards for celebrities or the people who are doing this job for politicians. They're highly trained. They've got like military law enforcement backgrounds. They always look kind of scary and off-putting, which I guess is part of their thing. But they're pattern recognition people, and their job is to spot all these little things and scan. So, Herman and Corin, two questions for you guys today. Number one, when someone, a minister, head of state, decides they want to do something human, like go for a swim in the beach or buy some sweets, can they do that? Or if they actually want to do anything in public, does it mean it's already got to be planned and coordinated? And number two, the entourage of scary looking security people they show up with their earpieces and whatnot, the personal protection officers, what kind of a background do those people have? And what kind of a skill set does it take to be excellent at noticing all the small things that might evade people, normal people who don't notice such things? Over to you, Herman and Corin.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corin, and I am sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem with my brother.
Herman Poppleberry, present and accounted for. It is good to be here, Corin.
It is a beautiful day outside, but we are actually staying in to dive into something that happened right down the street from us recently. Our housemate Daniel was out on a Friday afternoon doing what he does best, which is hunting for sugary peaches at the candy shop near the Mahane Yehuda market.
A noble pursuit. Those sugary peaches are a house staple.
They really are. But Daniel ran into something a bit more intense than a sugar rush. He saw a high-level politician, specifically Itamar Ben-Gvir, the Minister of National Security, buying sweets. But he was not just buying sweets. He was surrounded by a massive, highly visible security detail that basically took over the street.
It is quite a sight when that happens. The contrast between someone picking out gummy bears and a team of men with earpieces and tactical gear is jarring, to say the least.
Exactly. And Daniel had two great questions that I think we should really sink our teeth into today. First, how do these high-level officials actually handle basic human needs? Can a head of state or a minister ever truly be spontaneous? Or is every single trip to the beach or the candy store a logistical operation planned weeks in advance?
And the second part of his question is equally fascinating. He was looking at these personal protection officers and wondering about their background. What does it actually take to be the person who sees the tiny details everyone else misses? How do you train a human brain to be that hyper-aware?
It is such a good topic because it touches on the intersection of psychology, logistics, and power. So, Herman, let us start with that first one. Spontaneity. When a minister says, "I want a snack," what actually happens behind the scenes?
Well, the short answer is that for someone at that level of government, true spontaneity is almost a myth. It exists on a spectrum, but it is never quite as simple as you or I walking out the door. In the world of high-level protection, there is a concept called the advance.
Right. The advance team. I have heard that term, but how does it work for a casual trip?
So, in a perfect world, the security detail has a list of pre-approved locations. If a minister has a favorite coffee shop or a specific candy store they frequent, that place has already been vetted. The security service has mapped the exits, identified the line of sight from the street, and maybe even spoken to the owner.
But what if they just see a place they like while driving? Like, hey, that bakery looks good, pull over.
That is what they call a cold hit, and security teams generally hate cold hits. If a VIP decides to do something spontaneously, the team has to transition into a very high state of alert instantly. They do not have the luxury of a sweep. So, what you see is a tactical bubble. They will literally create a human perimeter around the official. They are not looking at the official, they are looking at everyone else.
It is interesting you mention the bubble because Daniel mentioned the police and security looking aggressive, or at least very intense. If it is a spontaneous stop, does that intensity go up because they are operating without a plan?
Absolutely. Uncertainty is the enemy of security. If they are in a place they have not cleared, they have to assume every person in that shop is a potential threat until proven otherwise. They are looking for hands, they are looking for bags, and they are looking for exits. It is a lot of mental processing happening in real time.
I wonder about the political side of this, too. In a place like Israel, or really anywhere with a populist leader, appearing like a regular person is part of the brand. Going to the market, buying candy, being among the people. But if you bring 20 armed guards with you, does it not kind of ruin the effect?
That is the great paradox of political security. It is often called political theater versus tactical reality. Sometimes the spontaneity is actually staged. The minister might want to be seen as a man of the people, so the office tells the security team, "We are going to the market on Friday at 2 in the afternoon."
So it looks spontaneous to the people buying peaches, but the security team has been there since noon?
Exactly. They might have plainclothes officers already blended into the crowd. They might have snipers on a nearby roof that you do not even see. By the time the minister actually steps out of the car, the area is what they call a sterile environment, even if it looks like a busy, chaotic market.
That is fascinating. It makes me think about the second-order effects of this. If a politician can never truly be spontaneous, they are essentially living in a permanent simulation. They only see the version of the world that their security team allows them to see.
It is very isolating. There is a famous story about a former United States president who wanted to go to a park just to sit on a bench. The amount of coordination required involved hundreds of people, shutting down roads and vetting every person within 500 yards. By the time he sat down, the park was not a park anymore. It was a secure zone. He realized he could not actually just sit in a park.
It reminds me of the Truman Show, but with more guns. But let us pivot to the people actually doing the protecting. Daniel asked about their background and their skills. These are not just your average security guards.
No, not at all. In Israel, for example, the unit responsible for protecting the prime minister and other high-ranking officials is part of the Shin Bet, which is the Internal Security Service. These people usually come from elite military backgrounds. We are talking about paratroopers, commando units, or specialized police tactical teams.
So they have the physical training, but what about the mental side? Daniel was impressed by how they spot the small details. Is that something you can actually learn, or is it just a personality trait?
It is both, but the training is incredibly rigorous. One of the core concepts they use is something called situational awareness, and specifically, they often train using the OODA loop. Have you heard of that?
I have. It stands for Observe, Orient, Decide, and Act. It was originally developed for fighter pilots, right?
Exactly. John Boyd, a military strategist, came up with it. The idea is that, in any conflict, the person who can cycle through those four stages the fastest wins. For a personal protection officer, the observe part is constant. They are not just looking at a crowd, they are scanning for anomalies.
What counts as an anomaly in a crowded candy shop?
That is where it gets really technical. They are trained in something called behavioral detection. They are looking for things that do not fit the context. For example, if it is a hot day in Jerusalem and someone is wearing a heavy jacket, that is an anomaly. If someone is standing still in a place where everyone else is moving, or if someone is looking at the security detail instead of at the candy, that is a red flag.
It is like they are looking for the glitch in the Matrix.
Precisely. They also focus heavily on the hands. If you watch a professional bodyguard, they are almost always looking at people's hands. Why? Because hands kill. You cannot pull a trigger or swing a knife without your hands. If they cannot see your hands, you are a high-priority target for their attention.
I remember reading about Cooper's color code. Does that play into this?
Yes, it is a classic framework for situational awareness. Most people spend their lives in conditioned white, which is completely unaware of their surroundings. You are looking at your phone, you are daydreaming. A personal protection officer is never in conditioned white. They live in conditioned yellow.
Condition yellow is relaxed alert, right?
Right. You are not paranoid, but you are constantly scanning. You are aware of who is behind you and where the exits are. If they see an anomaly, they move to condition orange, which is focused alert. They have identified a specific potential threat and are planning how to react. And condition red is the actual fight or flight moment.
It sounds exhausting. To be in condition yellow for 8 or 12 hours a day while standing in a sweet shop.
It is. That is why they rotate so frequently. Your brain literally cannot maintain that level of focus for that long without degrading. They also have to be experts in something called the baseline. To know what is wrong, you have to know what is normal for that specific environment. A market in Jerusalem has a very different baseline than a quiet street in a residential neighborhood.
That is a great point. The baseline for Mahane Yehuda is chaos. It is loud, people are shouting, there's a lot of pushing. So an officer there has to filter out all that normal noise to find the one thing that is actually dangerous.
And they are also trained in very subtle communication. You mentioned the earpieces. They are not just listening to a radio, they are part of a constant data stream. They use coded language to describe positions and threats so that if a bystander overhears them, they do not realize what is being said. They might say something like, "The package is moving to Sector 4, blue is clear."
The package being the politician. It is all very dehumanizing in a way, but I guess it has to be to stay objective.
It really does. And there is another skill that people often overlook, which is the ability to blend in. While Daniel saw the very visible, aggressive-looking police, there were almost certainly other officers there who looked like just another person buying gummy bears.
The plainclothes detail. That seems even harder. You have to maintain that hyper-awareness while pretending to be an average guy looking for a snack.
It is a specialized skill set. They call it the gray man concept. The goal is to be completely forgettable. If you saw them, you would not remember their face or what they were wearing, but they are seeing everything.
I want to go back to something you said earlier about the cost of this. We talked about the isolation of the politician, but what about the cost to society? When a minister goes to a candy shop and it requires 30 people and a street closure, what does that do to our perception of leadership?
That is a deep question, Korn. There is a term for this in political science called the securitization of the public sphere. As the perceived threat level goes up, the distance between the leaders and the led increases. It can create a feeling that the leaders are a separate class of people, protected from the realities that the rest of us live with every day.
It is like they are visiting our world from a different planet. They land their security ship, walk around for 10 minutes, and then blast off back to their secure compound.
And it creates a feedback loop. The more security you have, the more you are seen as a high-value target, which justifies more security. It is very hard to dial it back once it starts. In some countries, you will see a prime minister riding a bicycle to work with maybe one guard, but in high-conflict areas, that is seen as an unacceptable risk.
Right, and especially with someone like Ben-Gavir, who is a very polarizing figure. The security service has to account for not just organized threats, but also the lone wolf or the spontaneous protester.
Exactly. And that brings us back to Daniel's observation about the small details. These officers are trained to look for pre-attack indicators. These are subtle behaviors that happen seconds or minutes before an attack.
Like what?
It could be something like target fixation, where someone is staring intensely at the VIP and not moving. It could be someone adjusting their waistband repeatedly, which might suggest they are carrying a concealed weapon. It could even be something as subtle as a change in breathing or heavy sweating that does not match the environment.
It is almost like they are trying to read the future by looking at the present.
In a way, they are. They are trying to stay left of bang.
Left of bang?
Think of a timeline. The bang is the incident. Everything to the left of the bang is proactive security. Everything to the right of the bang is reactive. A good personal protection officer spends all their energy trying to stay on the left side. If they have to draw a weapon, something has already gone wrong with their primary mission, which is avoidance and deterrence.
That is a powerful way to put it. Their success is measured by the things that do not happen. It is a thankless job in that sense. If they do their job perfectly, nothing happens, and people like Daniel just think, "Man, those guys look intense for a candy shop."
Exactly. If they are doing it right, they are invisible or boring. It is only when there is a failure that we realize how complex the job actually is.
I am curious about the technology side of this too. We are here in 2026, and we talk a lot about artificial intelligence on this show. Are these security details using tech to help them spot those details?
Oh, absolutely. They are using real-time facial recognition in many cases. They might have cameras on their person or in their vehicles that are scanning the crowd and cross-referencing with databases of known threats. They also use acoustic sensors that can triangulate the sound of a gunshot instantly.
But does that make the human element less important?
I would argue it makes it more important. The tech can give you data, but it cannot give you intuition. A human officer can feel the tension in a crowd. They can sense when the energy in a room shifts. That is something an algorithm still struggles with. The best security is a combination of high-tech tools and highly trained human intuition.
It is like the tech is the radar, but the human is the pilot.
That is a perfect analogy. And the training for that intuition is fascinating. They use a lot of reality-based training. They will set up a mock market, hire dozens of actors, and have the trainee protect a VIP. They will throw in dozens of distractions and one very subtle threat. The trainee has to find that one threat while ignoring the chaos.
It is like the ultimate version of Where is Waldo, but with much higher stakes.
Much higher. And they do it over and over again until it becomes muscle memory. They want the reaction to be automatic. If they have to stop and think about what to do, it is too late.
You know, it makes me think about the history of this. If you go back 100 years, security was mostly just big guys standing around. When did it become this scientific psychological discipline?
A lot of it changed after the assassination of high-profile leaders in the mid-20th century. The assassination of John F. Kennedy was a huge turning point for the Secret Service in the United States. They realized that just having men on the back of a car was not enough. They needed to understand the environment, the logistics, and the psychology of the attacker.
And in Israel, the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin in 1995 must have been a similar watershed moment.
It was the single most significant failure in the history of Israeli VIP protection. It changed everything. It led to a much more aggressive and comprehensive approach to security. It is why you see the level of detail that Daniel saw at the candy shop today. The margin for error is zero.
It is a heavy burden for those officers to carry. Every single day, they have to be perfect. The attacker only has to be lucky once.
That is the grim reality of the profession. It requires a very specific type of personality. Someone who is disciplined, highly observant, but also capable of extreme violence if necessary, yet also capable of remaining calm and professional in a public setting. It is a rare combination.
I wonder if they ever get to enjoy the candy.
Honestly, probably not. When they are on duty, they are not even thinking about food. They are thinking about sectors, perimeters, and threat vectors. They might grab a quick protein bar in the car, but the idea of savoring a sugary peach while on a detail is probably the furthest thing from their minds.
It is a strange life. You are in the most interesting places, surrounded by the most powerful people, but you are never really there. You are always looking past the moment at what might happen next.
It is a life lived in the future tense.
So, to answer Daniel's first question, can they be spontaneous? The answer seems to be, only if they are willing to accept a much higher level of visible, aggressive security that essentially turns their spontaneous moment into a tactical operation.
Right. And to his second question, the background of these officers is elite military or police training, but their real skill is a highly developed, almost superhuman level of situational awareness and behavioral analysis. They are trained to see the world as a series of patterns and to spot the one piece that does not fit.
It really changes how you look at a scene like that. It is not just a bunch of guys in suits. It is a complex, multi-layered system of human and technological monitoring.
And it is all happening while someone is just trying to decide between the sour worms and the chocolate-covered almonds.
The mundane meeting, the monumental. That is Jerusalem in a nutshell, really.
It truly is. This city is a masterclass in those kinds of contrasts.
Well, I think we have given Daniel a lot to think about the next time he goes for his sugar fix. It is fascinating how a simple trip to the shop can open up this whole world of security doctrine and psychology.
It really does. And it makes you appreciate your own anonymity, doesn't it? I love that I can go buy a sugary peach and the only person watching me is the guy behind the counter wondering if I'm going to pay for that one I just sampled.
Exactly. The freedom to be invisible is a luxury we often take for granted.
Absolutely.
Well, this has been a great dive. I really enjoyed exploring the mechanics of this, Herman. You always bring such a wealth of detail to these topics.
My pleasure, Korn. It is a fascinating world, even if it is one I am glad to only observe from the outside.
Before we wrap up, I want to say a quick thank you to Daniel for sending this in. It was a great prompt that really got us thinking. And to all of you listening, thank you for joining us for another episode of My Weird Prompts.
Yes, thank you for spending your time with us. If you are enjoying the show, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a quick review on your favorite podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people find the show and keeps us going.
It really does. And remember, You can find all of our past episodes and a contact form at our website, myweirdprompts.com. We are also available on Spotify and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
We have a searchable archive there too, so if you want to dive deeper into any of the topics we have covered over our 374 episodes, that is the place to do it.
All right, I think that's a wrap for today.
Until next time, keep your eyes open and your situational awareness high.
But maybe not as high as a personal protection officer. You deserve a break.
Fair point. Condition yellow is enough for most of us.
Exactly. Thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. We will see you in the next one.
Goodbye, everyone.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.